Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guests, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. Thank you so much for joining us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about suicide, depression, anxiety, and sometimes those feelings that just go around in your head and your body, and you're saying, I just want to get off this track. I need a new track. I need a new life story. I need a new mission. I need a new purpose. Are we reframing our words? Are we looking at what's going on in our body, mind, and soul? Or are we perhaps just kind of stuck in this chaos that we call everyday life? Today, my guest is Dan Pelly, a suicide survivor, and actually he has some great stories too where he and I can both share all of our experiences around all of these topics because we both have been down in the trenches, but we could also tell you this is an evolution of life. It is an up and down ebb flow. It's not that you're good, better, worse, not having things, or all of these words and tags and labels we like to give on things and people, and we say, oh, you're there, ooh, shun away. Oh, you're there, ooh, I want to latch on to you. And it's really about the stories that Dan and I will be sharing is how to guide you to maybe reflect on your life, not giving you answers to follow me. It's more, how can you reflect on your life and say, I think I'll see what that opens up for me. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. J. It's good to be with you again. And I think your opener is very important. I'm actually an attempted suicide survivor, not that I've lost someone to suicide. I had a friend that I think OD'd. I think it was self-induced. Was not happy in life, but that happened to him a couple of years ago. I was trying to help him, and I think I kept him alive for 3 or 4 years. He told me that, you know, without my inspiration and things that I was, you know, talking to him about, he thinks he would have, you know, started back on the drugs again. But he shot up one day, and, you know, he went back to the heroin, and, you know, yeah. He got a bad batch, and he died. So sometimes, you know, suicide can be subliminal and subconscious,
right.
But it is about the individual. It's not about, you know, follow me, follow you. It's, you know, you have to follow your own path and find out, you know, your true mission in life. So I do appreciate being on.
You know, I think, Dan, I think it's really about our life experiences and the ups and downs is what really we're sharing. And so many people want to shy away and say, I don't want to go there. I don't want to hear someone else's story. I don't want to tell my story. However, that's really what's so important in life because then we can kind of, it's almost like when someone in your family dies from drugs or alcohol overdose or abuse or whatever that might be, and everybody kind of shuns away from them because they feel like, you know, oh, well, it's almost like, oh, can I have that happen in my life too? It's almost like they don't want to engage in the story because then they kind of feel like those are other people. It could never happen to me. So I don't kind of want to go there because I don't want to know about it. And it's sort of like, I don't know, it's almost like we want to take the pieces in the puzzle, and I think it's almost like secularizing society. Like those that, oh, they've got issues, and, oh, we don't have any issues, so we'll stay over here and protect ourselves beyond all means so we don't have that. Don't you think we see ourselves like kind of splitting sometimes?
I think it's going on all the time, you know, because until it hits home, or until you experience it, then you have this, you know, profound appreciation for experience that do not judge, because when you start judging, which we do a lot of, it's just human nature.
Yeah.
We have this, you know, this judging mentality, but I never thought about suicide. The the experience of something is always a life educational event. You know, that you start appreciating. Not that you appreciate the suffering, but you appreciate the fact that, geez, I shouldn't have judged that so quickly. I shouldn't have shied away from that so fast. And, you know, I learned a lot, obviously, when I had my first suicide attempt. I've had two in my life, one in 1996 and again in 2010. And I don't plan on going back a third time, but the one in 96 was pretty severe. You know, I ingested over 250 Tylenol. I'm lucky to be here. I'm blessed. I feel fortunate and to want to bring up, my inspirational speaking to, inspire other people to want to live. But when that happened to me, my first suicide attempt, and I learned so much afterwards, once I survived and, went to college and, got an associate's degree and, worked my way through a psychological program, psychology, and learned so much about the effects of suicide and people that are left behind and people that we lose. That, when people are hurting, like you said, people don't want to deal with it. Even when I'm promoting my suicide inspirational speaking, I see other people out there doing it. You'll get hits on YouTube, over something ridiculous, and you'll get a million hits. I said, no, the million hits should be about suicide. And suicide doesn't get as many, or, sometimes it really has to really fester before it does. But I think people just look at it and go, oh, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want nothing to do with that until it hits home. And when it hits home, that's when it becomes a reality and a real, reality sets in, like on any other matter, drinking or drugging, anything.
And then they're afraid to even look at it that might be the reason. We see so many people that are kind of, if they've got I've seen this before. They have a friend, they say put on the death certificate heart attack. They're not going to put drug overdose. Or they're not going to put suicide attempt, or they're not going to put this, that, or the other. I think we lie to ourselves so many times that we're in trouble or that something might be going on. And that lie is exactly what puts the walls around us. And once you have a wall around you, it's almost like, what's it going to take for someone to get in? But really, sometimes I think, I almost have, just as I'm saying this, a picture of someone that's feeling this. And they're having this big wall around them, and they're sitting in there in the darkness just waiting for someone to knock on the door, and nobody knocks on the door, So I think sometimes when you and I share our stories, we say, let's knock on the door, let's bang on that door, let's keep standing, let's slide messages under the door. Do you know what I mean? I think that time when people would say, let's try this, or let's do this, or let's see this, or let's go there. All of these things beforehand are really to reach that other person, don't you think?
I think so. I think, with the internet and, the high tech and the desensitizing of so many things that are going on and the connections, although we make connections on Facebook and we talk to old friends we haven't, talked to, when I'm dealing with, one-on-one interactions with people, I mean, that's where you make the difference with somebody, being someone behind that door or someone that you don't see face-to-face. But when I'm interacting, and I make sure I'm interacting as much as I can, because that one person in front of me, and that could even be a cashier, could be anybody when I'm going through my day. When I'm inspiring people, it's not just when I'm out speaking, or I'm doing my YouTube videos, or I'm talking on the radio, or whatever I'm going to be doing. When I'm inspiring, it's a constant for me. This is how I live my life now. So if I see someone downtrodden at the cash register, and you can tell they're just having a horrible time, something's wrong, there's some suffering, because we all suffer from one thing or another. I look at that person, and I put a smile on my face. Even if I'm having a bad day, I really push that smile out to show them that you matter. And sometimes that one interaction and even that one smile can change a whole person's day. And if we all, were doing this, it would be a much better world.
Yeah, see, my thing is always the Walmart cart. I always tell people to, I don't know if you heard it or not, but when you go into Walmart, instead of going to the right, go to the left, and go on Senior Citizen Day. And what happens if you go into the left? everybody's got their pattern, you know, if you go into the right, like which lane you'll go up and down. But if you go the opposite way, you're going to hit every single person in there with your cart. And when they're elders, these people have not even seen anyone to talk to. If you bump into their cart and say, oh, hello, or oh, my gosh, sorry, you know, or you know how when you're going with the cart and one goes one way and you'll go that way and then you go the other way and you kind of can't get around? And I'll say, oh, we just came to Walmart today to dance. And you could see so many people smiling, you know, because if you look at elders, who even talks to them anymore? Do you know what I mean? Nobody,
well,
you know?
We all want to be connected.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think, Dan, I think that's so important because I think the biggest things that people want is to be loved, to be heard, and to be seen.
Exactly.
Those three
exactly.
things. And I think you just delivered on it, and so did I. You know, you just smile, I see you, and I hear you, and, you know, and it's just, that seems to be the core. It's almost like the trifecta. If you can get into any one of those corners, you kind of can reach someone, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I wear my sweatshirt. It's a, you know, it's a Buddhist quote. It says, rule your mind or it will rule you. And
right.
I get so many people interacting with me because of it. Oh, I love your quote on your shirt. I says, yeah, but are you living it? You know,
yeah.
And I start having a conversation with them. So things open up because, you know, as my mentor in Buddhism that I practice, you know, and he's 90 years old now, President Keita, he always speaks about from the Human Revolution volumes of 30 volumes he wrote over 50 years that the most important person beside yourself and have a standalone spirit and be strong is that person that's right in front of you at that moment. Because you might not have that moment again that might change that person's day,
right.
possibly change that person's life. And this is the theory, you know, the philosophy that I've been really on the past 9 years now. And I, you know, and I plan on continuing, you know,
right.
I plan on continuing for the rest of my life because I see what he means by that. He always would go to the people behind the scenes. He wouldn't just go in for the speaking. He would always go find that worker that was washing the pans or somebody
right.
that was doing the low-level job and make sure he made a connection with them. And that's where it all developed and you know, people getting inspired and so forth. But people are always seeking, you know, something and they're looking for the inspiration, you know, what, you know, it depends if it's from anybody, any quotes, any motivational speakers, inspirational speakers. And where I think, and I was doing the same thing when I was younger, but where I was missing something was inspiring myself.
Yes.
Really yeah. digging inside and saying, who am I? What do I want? What mission do I want to follow? And once you start connecting that dot, you know, those dots together,
mm-hmm.
boy, you can get this inner strength that is I never had before. I thought I was a go-getter when I was younger and I could do it all and shop and getting everything done. But when I had my attempt and a divorce and a house loss and depression and then clinical depression and all these things started happening to me, I didn't even know who I was anymore. And
mm-hmm.
to find yourself is not going to happen the next day. You know, this has been a process in a lifetime. Like, you're not going to get these quick fixes. Everybody's looking for the quick fix, the quick excitement.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't develop some patience, and that was one thing I wasn't good at, once I developed patience that, look, at you're in this clinical depression, Dan, you got this problem, it's going to take time. You've got to stop being so anxious and the anxiety to get out of it so quickly because you're going to have to own it, man. And once you own it, you know, then you start developing and then you start realizing and the guidance that I get is that when you become strong, you can help others become strong. And that's the mission I'm on now.
And also, too, when you are in it, you own it, you recognize it, you observe it, and you sit your butt down and feel it in every core of your being, it then you said, okay, I feel it, I'm done with it, and you release its power over you. And you're gaining your power back. And really, that's where we say, does something outside of you always have power over you, or can you learn to be with it and realize that the power is coming from inside? Just like you said, it's all about being able to find out who you are and you are this strong, energetic being. It's just, you know, if you're given a piece of pie, how many pieces can you give out where there's nothing left? And it's just to say, okay, I'm going to make my own, and this is where I am, and bringing your power back in. Sometimes we give out, or we follow other people, or we're searching, and we say there's nothing left. It's because every time you search, you're saying another part of you is wrong or another part of you is missing, and you have to find it in someone else. And then when you bring it home, that puzzle piece doesn't fit. Of course it doesn't fit because it's theirs. It's not yours, right?
Exactly. I mean, I'm all into the motivational speakers. That's Tony Robbins or inspirational speakers, you know, and you know, I've seen him. I've read some of his books early on in my career, and I've opened offices. You know, there's certain things that you can get from certain people, but you can never
right.
get the self-empowerment that we talk about that
right.
you're going to have to dig in for, not run away from, not kill yourself over, not, you know, say, oh, it's someone else's problem, a mask it with this, that, or everything else that we try to mask it with. And I think because of society, and, you know, although we've gotten more pleasures from things and you know, we have things quicker, you know, on hand, and, you know, everything's become more convenient, there's more suffering and there's more unhealthiness in the world than ever than when the simple days were going on. Yeah, there was things that weren't good about the old days, but there was a lot of good about the old days, too. The value,
mm-hmm.
the gratitude, the appreciation, the hard work, not entitled. There's so
right.
many things that you can take into this world today and I try to reflect on younger people, too, that nobody owes you anything. Nobody
right.
owes you nothing. Nobody owes you your health. Nobody owes you your financial status. And definitely nobody owes you your happiness. And when you
yeah.
start relying on those three things on someone else, you're going to have
mm-hmm.
problems, be it the drug, drinking, killing yourself, isolating, and not living the life you deserve, because I firmly believe we were born in this world to be happy, not miserable. Although people say, oh, this is hell, it's, for me as a Buddhist, it's heaven and hell. This is what we deal with every day, the good, the bad,
right.
the ugly. And we have to get a hold of the fact that we suffer what we need to suffer and we enjoy what we need to enjoy. That's life. And once
mm-hmm.
I took that, you know, philosophy on it, everything started changing for me. Instead of looking out for that, oh, let me take that and take it home. And then when I got home, it wasn't working for me.
Right.
You know, things like that. What is going to work for you as an individual is what I try to inspire people. You know, I heard someone say on another suicide speaker, he's so dramatic. Good.
Right.
I want him to be dramatic. I mean, I'm not a big rah-rah, pom-pom type guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, rah-rah, boom, you know, inspirational speaker. I'm more connecting with my words and deep, you know, deeper into someone's heart of really turning that switch in their heart to say, yeah, my life does matter. Yes, I do
right.
matter. Yes, I am important. Yes, I'm not going to exhaust myself for everybody else and the do-gooder or the this or the that. We give ourselves out so much that there's nothing left for us. But to take time for yourself, like when I'm done with this, you know, interview, I'm going to take my run today. You know, it's spring now. I got to start, you know, doing things. Of course, you work hard. You do everything you have to do. You have to put some work into yourself. And a lot of people
mm-hmm.
feel to do this. I was feeling to do it when I was sick. I was like, when I talked to my therapist, he's like, you taking any time for yourself, Dan? You know, what
right.
are you doing? Is it all about everybody else all the time that you have to be everybody's, you know, the victor and the hero, and I took care of that, I took care of this. And men seem to be driven towards that anyway. We're driven to, like women are caretakers, men
mm-hmm.
are, you know, geared towards, you know, I'll take care of that, or I'll fix that, the fix-it man, you know?
Right.
And men get caught up in this fix-it thing, and I really try to connect with men that, you know, it's okay to be weak too, man. I know you don't like to show it to somebody, but it's okay to cry. It's okay to let
yeah.
go. It's okay to say you need some help. You know, most of these men that are killing themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, they don't reach out for help. They just don't, because it's
yeah.
embarrassing. You know, they feel guilty. Hey, I'm supposed to be tough. And you know, all this mixed feelings that they get where they never seek out any help.
You know, sometimes I tell people, I've also had suicide within my family unit and suicide attempts. And what I would always say to him, I would say, oh, okay, so are you done with that experience now? And you'd say, yeah, I'm done with it now. Then it would come along again. And we talked about this one day, and I said to him, I said, are they all the same? Are all those attempts for the same reason? And he said, no, for the first one, I wanted to learn something, and I learned it. Second one was, I had another challenging thought, and I learned that one. And the third one, and this went on and on. And finally, at the end, I said, okay, are you done with this yet? He said, yeah, you know what? I think I'm done with it now. And he didn't feel that he had to push himself to the edge to hang over by his fingernail to be able to learn something or to be able to experience something or to understand that it was a choice or to be able to reach out or maybe to listen to someone else or do something else. Whatever it is or whatever it is for anyone, there is no one way or answer. And I know as parents and family members, we always want to have the answers. We want to take them to someone to fix them, you know, or ship them out here or there. When really, it was just there was nothing that could change this person's mind, and he had to get that and find that for himself. And sometimes it's not the greatest, but what that did was it's now finished for, you know, for as in the foreseeable future for him. And I think sometimes we say people want to always find someone to fix them or to be able to say that the person who is addicted or the person who is having these issues or the person that has the mental concerns, they always want them to be, go fix them and look at what they're doing to the family. They're destroying the family. They're causing this, they're causing that. And they really take it on as an affront to them versus taking it on as reaching out and really helping another human being. You know, I see this so often, and it's just, oh, my gosh. So let's talk a little bit about hanging over the edge and about the concepts of rehab and maybe also, too, about how connection to the family unit and friends may have to split, may help. Sometimes it might even hinder things. I think no one ever has the answers, but I think the concept that if someone is in trouble or needs help, everyone and everything that's possible should be explored, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think intervention is important. You know, I had an older brother that passed in 04, a month after my dad, you know, Vietnam era guy. He never went to Vietnam, but always felt guilty. Good brother, good older brother, good loving heart, always helped the vets. Got caught up, you know, after a couple of breakups and heartbreaks and the drugs and the drinking. You know, he passed at 53, a month after my dad was 78, very devastating on the family. But we watched him through the years, and we were intervening all the time, loving him, caring for him. And there was a codependency involved, too. You know, he got very codependent on do it for me, get me this, get me that. He's burning bridges. You get angry at him, then you're nice to him. And then you're trying, and you love him as a brother, and you say, you know, you're gonna. And I just realized when I think about him, it's like, you know, even though he had his problems with drinking, you know, at times he was getting better. And at the very end, he was getting better again. And that was which made it so difficult that he indulged one night and it took him. And I just saw him getting better and loving and caring and helping vets, you know, process their paperwork. And he was just a good guy like that, my brother Frank. And I miss him daily, and it's just, you know, and I think about this codependency, and we all have this need to fix me, do it for me, my therapist talking to me, or whatever's going on, and when I was trying to recover, getting through my recovery, going to programs, you know, walking 5-6 flights of stairs every day, you know, getting there and saying, you know, and I just realized, and I said to myself, nobody's going to do this for you then. Everybody's going to look at you like you're an attempted suicide. You're sickly. You got depression. And although my family loved me and they intervened, I knew that they only could do so much. Like you only could do so much for your family member. There's only so much we can do. And this, in a person, and I really try to, you know, really inject this in my inspirational speaking that, you know, and it's part of my Buddhist practice too, this standalone spirit you have to develop. And it's not saying we don't care, we don't want to give treatment or recovery or therapy. You know, yes, all that matters. We need to find the right therapist. We need to find the right mix of medicine. Some will make it worse, some will make it better. So we have to get the combination going. But when I look at this codependency, it's not like, oh, when I see someone hurt, hey, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Obviously, I don't want that said to me either. When I was depressed and I was weak, you know, you could say boo to me and I'd start crying. I mean, I was just like a basket case. I've lost everything. I want to check out. I hate life. I mean, everything was happening to me at one point. I mean, and just so we, you know, my skin became very thin. And I didn't pick it up. And I was always had thick skin. I was always tough like that. But toughness is a funny thing because when you grow up tough physically with the Italian family and his toughness and what men think is tough, or we watch it on the screen of the hero and the toughness, it's a double-edged sword. Yes, you need to be a warrior in certain things, and then there's this gentleness that comes in too. So you can be very tough by being very gentle too. And it's just, I'm seeing this combination going on now in my life, but I really, when it comes to recovery, yes, we need all those combinations, but I think, you know, we can't keep waiting for someone else to give us the answer.
Right. Yeah, I think it's not the, do you think it's maybe not the answer, but maybe a guidance? And that's what the counselors do?
Oh, the guidance is excellent. You know, my counselor was really, you know, I've been with him for years. He's an older gentleman. He's older than me.
Right.
And, you know, and I've been with him for years on my second attempt in 2010 when my stepdaughter almost got killed in a car accident and took a brain injury. It really devastated me. And I wasn't doing my suicide program that I wrote in 2000. And I wasn't doing, I was raising another family, three other kids, a wonderful part. You know, all that was great. I mean, I would never change it for anything, but it all changed when she got hurt, and I was reliving my depression again for the first time in 14 years, and I learned again. It's like, you know, I can appreciate the fact that I never heard the twist that, oh, I wanted to try something to see the experience. Obviously, that could be very deadly, and that person might not be here for trying that experience. So I don't recommend anybody trying suicide, because, like, I had a brother-in-law, so I'm really scared, and I heard you try, and you weren't successful, but I'm really afraid to try to hurt myself. And I'm telling them, stay scared. You know, don't use that as an experiment of trying to hurt yourself, because you could be successful and you're going to be gone. So you want to find your experiences and other things than trying to hurt yourself, you know. But I realized when I saw, you know, my counselor was talking to me about this, and he's like, what is it, Dan? What's going on? What makes you suffer so much?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, sometimes I don't even want to talk at or talk with, and maybe it was the lack of hugs my father never gave me, you know? And maybe, like, he was a good guy and he loved me, and I know he loved me in his heart, but actions mean more than words, you know? And I never got that AT&T hug from my dad, you know, like, I love you, son, I'm proud of you, son, you know?
Right.
And now my son, that's older, and I got some great kids, my son, I make sure I hug him and I hold him. And I tell him, even at his age, in his 30s, and I love you, son. My counselor helped me with this just by this. When I was leaving his office one day years ago, he grabbed me and he just hugged me. That's all he did. And it changed everything that day early on.
Mm-hmm.
And when he hugged me and he showed some human compassion besides the educational and the theories and the philosophy and the psychology, It just made the world a difference to me. And not that he became a father figure, but he showed me it's okay, Dan. You're going to be okay. And it's okay to love yourself. And now every time I see him, and I only see him occasionally now, he hugs me before I leave.
Right. And I think that's going back to the beginning. What we said, too, is that you want to be seen, loved, and cared for, too. You know, you want to be able to know that you're actually – someone can see you even if you're in your brokenness, even if you're in your perfection. You know what I mean? And it's sometimes people say, oh, but they don't want to touch me because I'm sick, or they don't want to touch me because I'm crazy, or they don't want to touch me because I'm thinking different thoughts. And it's like, I don't see all of that. I just see a human being, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the world can be callous, you know, it can be cold, and people can be definitely insensitive and mean, and there's evil in the world. You know, there's meanness in this world, and we try to combat it at every step we can. But I saw that exactly. You know, when you connect with somebody, a smile or a hug, or the, hey, you matter, and hey, what's going on with you? What's happening? You know, what's happening with you? Just one simple sentence, and I might say to the cash register person or someone, a waitress, and it's like, instead of have a nice day, you have a winning day now, right? You have a winning day. You have a winning life. And they look at me like a winning life. It's like, you know, no one ever talks to me that way. You know? And I'm just saying these things to people. And it's like, once you say something to somebody, you'd be surprised at how much they come out with. And they start sharing with you about their sufferings and realizing. And I you know, was talking about suffering, and you know, I'm going to be putting in my next video that we're dealing with suffering. And I wrote this out, and I'm memorize it. That one person's suffering, it can be minor to another, but hell to that person, or it can be enlightening to that person, and hell for another. And that's why we never should be judging, because, you know, we just don't know. We just don't know what's going on in a person's life, or someone that's wanting to attempt suicide, or someone that has attempted and they're trying to recover after years. And when the lady said, oh, that person that tried to commit suicide, he's so dramatic. And I'm like, no, I want that person to be dramatic, because when he wasn't dramatic, he was trying to kill himself. So I'd rather him be dramatic than him trying to go kill himself.
Yeah, and I think we should accept it. Yeah, accept what they're crying out. I think a lot of times people cry out and we mistake it for whining, you know. Really crying out is their expression in the place they're in at that moment. You know, and I think to be able to say, okay, I hear you. Now can we focus in on where that's coming from? That's really the goal, I think, of a lot of therapy, yes?
Oh, absolutely. I think once you find the core of the problem, and usually it's about self-love, a lot of it. You know, it could be abuse. This could be, you know, there's abuse going on and things happening. But a lot of it is the self-love. It really, I think we lack it. A lot of people lack it. It's not just confidence and feeling strong inside. And I think even the most confident people have a neglection of self-love. And I realized that even when I was at my biggest accomplishments when I was younger, something missing. And after all these years and these two attempts, and I'm saying, you know, that's it, man. The self-love and that live with some dignity that, hey, I'm a human being. I made some mistakes. You know, I tried to hurt myself. I didn't do good in a relationship. I wasn't the best of a guy at times. Or, you know, and admitting, and here's the thing, because, you know, the narcissism that's going on in this world is really about accountability. And the last thing a narcissist wants to do is take accountability. And when you take accountability, which I've always done in my life, even when I was thinking I was the hot shot when I was younger, I still took accountability. My parents taught me about, hey, you got to take accounts for what you've done in life, you know, for who you are, what you are, and be accountable. And I think more people need to do that. And people run away from accountability. We see it all the time. And they suffer for it, you know, and they live miserable lives because of it. Because if you're not accountable, I think you're going to be miserable for the end of days.
Yeah. Well, I think, Dan, you know, in closing, let's share a few tips on that are very important around this topic. I think my number one, I think I'll start us out, is to be seen. You know, we don't want to isolate, but if someone seems like they are not seen or not loved or not heard, really try to reach out in all ways that you possibly can. As we've said, you know, with a smile, with a hug, with a touch, with listening, with just being present. And I think that's important for many people. Would you like to share some more?
I think, you know, the isolation is a big problem, you know, and I was in it heavily. And even when I had loving family around me both times, they didn't know my secret thoughts. They didn't know I was secretly, you know, isolating in my thoughts. Where how am I going to do this? Where am I going to make the attempt? And I'm so lucky I survived both. And it's just, this isolation thing's a problem. And finding that moment, when the moment came, I wanted to check out twice, and that moment becomes very heavy. This is where I'm trying to get people to reach out for help, because, and I did, you know, I reached out to therapists in 96, like, I need help. I went to priest. I've done everything. I need help. Right. Help me, help me, help me. And only I needed to help myself. And I think once I started pushing myself a little bit, not just jump out of bed and everything's okay, I said, man, I gotta get out of bed. I got to do this myself, because nobody's going to do it for me. And you're going to have to reach out for help. And if anybody's out there suffering in that manner, which usually the people that are isolating like this, you know, they're not going to any speaking engagement. They're going on walks. They're not doing anything. They're staying in their room 24/7.
Right.
And they don't want to get out. They say wash, eat, maybe. And most ain't washing. So I think starting there on the recovery for me was the little thing. The simplicity was huge. When I felt that I was clean and I washed and I ate and I was loved by family, just those little things, just to get out of bed and put my foot on the floor, was a victory. And when I started with those little steps, they became bigger steps into a recovery program and then into more therapy and then finding the right medications that were going to work for me. Although I'm med-free today, because I was determined to be med-free, and I was fortunate that I can be, I'm still not against it if need be. I know people are against it. But once I got the right combinations of medicines, you know, I got away from the, you know, the ideations of suicide and wanting to kill myself. And like you said at the beginning, right from the very beginning, our mindset, and like write a new tune. You know, this is a broken record. I have to write a new tune for my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I started realizing that, you know, it's all psychological sometimes, that we get psychotic in these suicide states, that we have to find some kind of connection, either it's spiritual, passionate for something, work. Once you connect for something that makes your heart go, besides, you know, immediate falling in love or the love bubble, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something that gives you satisfaction in some ways that you've never had before. And that could be just self-love in itself. But when this combination got going for me, that's when I knew I was recovering. And I knew this is going to be, you know, a real good experience to talk to people about, because this is where it matters that, you know, that it's going to happen, you know, this way, because I'm going to make it happen. But I thank all the people that helped me, my family, my therapist, people I even talked to today like you, the gratitude of that you're alive and life is precious. And it's like, your life matters. Never give up.
Yeah.
And once you take on that attitude and you can wedge that in there a little bit and at least say that to yourself, my life matters and I'm never going to give up again. And even if I run into obstacles and sufferings, I realize that there's another hurdle I just jumped that hurdle. There's a mountain I'm climbing now to really reduce this suicide rate. It's a huge mountain, because, look, we're not going to stop everybody from killing themselves. It's just it's just impossible. You're not going to end suicide in itself. But we can deter, and we can get a lot of people to hang in there and not kill themselves. Like when you were talking about, they you know, they don't like the report about suicide because it's such a shameful, embarrassing thing. That number that we look at now at 44,000 a year just in America alone is, what, 800,000 people yearly in the world killing themselves. I mean, but when you look at the number in America, how much higher would that number be if they were reporting death by car, by police, you know, death by cop, a suicide cop, all these things that they're not reporting because it's saving the family embarrassment. And I can see, understand why they do it, but we're not getting the true numbers out there that a lot of people suffering, and all these little things that we keep talking about add up to big things in your recovery. And I would, you know, really try to stress to anybody listening that are in the moment of the depression and wanting to kill yourself, that just try to hang in there a little longer today, tomorrow. Reach out to somebody. Reach out to a family member. say, look right at him like I did on my second attempt, looked at my wife and said, I need help. I need help. I'm not right. I think I'm going to hurt myself again, and I don't want to. And yeah. And I, even though I made the attempt, at least the words come out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. And it changed everything for me. Because people do want to help. People like yourself, my therapist. People are, you know, good-hearted. They want to help you. And once you allow people to help you, things really start coming together for you. So that's what I would want to leave with somebody, that, you know, reach out for help. It's okay.
Yeah, I think the idea is every time you feel yourself pulling in, like rounding your shoulders, pulling in towards the middle of your body, it's like push it back. Push it back and say no, you know. Push it back and say, no, I need to reach out. I need to stand up. I need to be present. Because when you start becoming not present is when it can start becoming a little too heavy to hold on to. So if you start becoming present in the moment, whatever it is that's going on, that's when you're able to really have a powerful say and, no, you know, I am worth it. I am going to be here. I am going to step up. I'm going to do this. I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know why, and I don't know what it looks like, but I'm just here. And I think that's really what we're sharing is that be present, be in the moment, and do the best you can, yes?
And just also the, you know, the hope thing. You know, I know people sometimes look at hope as something that's not tangible.
Right.
But when I hung on to that last bit of hope that even when I was making the attempt and ingesting 250 Tylenols, which was very, very violent, there was still hope in my heart that I wanted to live. I want to live. I don't want to die. And it was there. It was subliminal. It was there. It was deep down, but it was still there. And I grab onto that hope now when I'm in my darkest moments, even, you know, it's still my troubles now in life, whatever's happening. I say, you know what? Tomorrow's another day there. Tomorrow's another day, and you're granted another day, and you're blessed with another day that you could possibly make a difference, not only for yourself, but your close family members, and chanting and praying for their happiness, whatever I'm doing. And I just know that hope part is to hang on to hope, because if you don't have any hope, we can create it too. We can create hope. And once I did that for myself, things really started propelling to me in my life. And not that I struggle every day like everybody else, but I'll tell you one thing I'm really not going towards anymore in my life, and this has been going on now for 8 years, is ever thinking about suicide again. Even though I've gotten some bad moments and like, oh, you know, everybody has a thought of it, like, oh, they're better off without me, or I should check out. That's not even coming into play anymore, because it's not an option anymore. It's not an option. It's not a healthy option. It's not a good option. The option is to get up and fight another day.
Right.
And I said, you know what? Some days I fight. Some days I take it easy. And just like when you said, when you get up and your shoulders are in and you're all inverted, stand up, put your chest up. Hey, take a deep breath, and you know, you're propelling me to really go for my run.
Mm-hmm.
You're making me feel like now I gotta really run. I can't, you know, neglect it now. You know, so I'm not gonna neglect it, and when I get off, I'm definitely gonna go for the run. So, because it's nice to spring the weather up in New England finally, we're starting to get some decent weather finally here. So. But it was great. It was, I think it's an important conversation that we're having, that it's not just a quick fix or one answer is going to change someone's life. It's going to be their own inner works and reaching out and you know, doing everything they can to help themselves.
Dan, can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? Also your YouTube channel?
You can go on YouTube. I'm under Dan Pelly, Inspiration Suicide, Inspirational Speaker Dan Pelly. I'm on Twitter at Pelly57. You'll find me on Instagram also at Pelly57. Facebook also under Dan Pelly. I have a separate page that I have for suicide prevention. And that's how you can find me. And I'm always inspiring every day and, you know, fighting the fight to live another day and help other people live another day.
Well, Dan, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. I think also, too, when you say, when we stand up, it says, breathe in life. You really need to breathe in life each day because, you know, it's not something that's always, it's always there inside of you. However, if you breathe it in, it kind of like reactivates it and it kind of, it's like re-energizing yourself. It's sort of like, okay, it's out there. Well, no, it's not. You have some in you, just keep bringing more in. So each time you breathe in life. That's the best thing we can say. Yes?
It's like revving up that engine. You know, we start our fire every day. We have to find a way to rev up our engine. You know, I do a practice in Buddhism. I chant. I rev up my engine. Now, whatever it takes. You don't have to
whatever
do
it takes
to do it. Whatever it takes to rev that engine up, rev up, man, because it's that's the way to live life.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for joining us today. It was such a pleasure to have you with us.
It was my pleasure also. Thank you, Dr. J.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Dan Pelly, please do click on the links on the bottom of today's show page and go directly to his Twitter and his Facebook and his other references. And it's really about breathing in life because it is there for the taking. Open the door, get some sun, breathe in some air. Just find a way. Find a way to step out of wherever you're stuck. There is a way. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.